new people who are joining us on the call tonight. So, Brexit. No one on tonight's call would have failed to recognise that not only is the outcome of the EU referendum of massive importance for the UK and Europe as a whole, but it's also going to have a huge impact on the campaigning we as results are doing over the forthcoming months. With the possibility of potentially even an early general election and political turmoil guaranteed in all the major parties, it's very likely that politicians will have a lot to think about besides international development issues. However, this is true every time that there's any kind of election or political upheaval, so we should not be shy of carrying on campaigning on the issues that we've been pressing politicians about over recent months and making sure that these issues remain part of the debate. Results of vital advocacy work on health, education and economic opportunities for all carries on. We just have to work a bit harder to show why it's relevant, particularly when there are some very vocal voices out there calling for what amounts to a real retreat from internationalism. You may be wondering why REIT Results didn't say anything much about the referendum in advance. As a charity, we're bound by UK charity law, and the rules on political campaigning have become even stricter over the last couple of years. There's been considerable scrutiny of charities that have been seen to be going past their remit, and as a result, most international development charities refrain from coming down on one side or other of the debate prior to the referendum, unless they were large enough to have been able to take specific legal advice. Now the referendum is over, however, that has changed. The EU is an important donor in the world of international development, and 10% of UK aid is spent through the EU development programmes, which, if we repatriated all that money and spent it through DFID, would almost make up for the declining value of the pound. This is just the tip of the iceberg, though, with ramifications affecting many of the issues that we care about. So at this stage, it simply isn't possible for us to see exactly how things will end up. The whole sector is watching very keenly, and we will be urging whatever government we end up with to maintain Britain's global leadership on international development and to keep our promises to the world's poor. The political fallout from the EU referendum is rightly huge. It will be many months before it's clear. Hi there, who just joined?
It's Brighton, we've just joined again.
Welcome back, Brighton. I was just saying the political fallout from the EU referendum is going to be huge, and it will be many months before it becomes clear not only who's in charge, but the direction that the UK wants to take as a nation, both in its exit negotiations with European partners, in our domestic politics, and in the new economic and political relationships we form globally in the coming years. At Results, we are internationalists. We want to work in practical ways with others to overcome some of humanity's most serious but solvable problems. Problems such as acute malnutrition, the need to vaccinate all children against common killer diseases, no matter where they live, tackle TB, the world's deadliest infectious disease, and to help communities to become more resilient to the impacts of climate change. In 2015, along with the whole international community, the UK ratified the Global Goals, an ambitious but achievable vision of an end to extreme poverty by 2030. It's one of the noblest of human ambitions, and we must not let progress against the goals be sidetracked, even by the very serious national conversations we're now facing. Rather than being an alternative narrative to discussions about our nation's future, our commitment to the Global Goals should complement and enhance our vision of Britain's role in the world. Because the UK is truly a global leader, playing a strong part in overcoming some of the deadliest scourges on the planet, it should continue to do so. We know that the British public want our country to continue to be a force for good in the world and to support developing countries. On the 14th of June, the last day of our national conference, it was humbling to hear MP after MP from all the major parties stand up in a parliamentary debate to say how proud they were of what UK aid achieves in the world. Since 2002, it has enabled 13.2 million people to get tuberculosis treatment. It's helped over 10 million children get a good quality education. In the last 5 years, it's provided food rations to over 20 million Syrian refugees. As our politicians grapple with the very considerable leadership challenges that have been thrust upon them, the business of government, including the Department for International Development, goes on as best it can. The issues we work on are so important for people living in poverty, we mustn't be deflected from our focus on them and we need to continue working towards the global goals while being sensitive and respectful of the national debate about our future. Right now, one of the things we're focusing on is tuberculosis. And those of you who are regular action takers will know we've been focusing for some months on the need to replenish the global fund to fight AIDS, TB, and malaria. We've asked you to help develop parliamentarians to be champions of the global fund, explaining about its life-saving work to end the three epidemics and explain its business case for the $13 billion it needs to carry on this work at the scale needed to be on track to end all three epidemics by the year 2030. After a great deal of waiting, we now know the details of how and when the replenishment will happen. Last month, Canada came forward to host the conference, which will now be in Montreal on the 16th of September. This is an awkward time, given the date for the Conservative leadership elections in early September, but makes it clear that we have even less time to influence the UK government to make an ambitious replenishment pledge. Now, obviously, the current political uncertainty makes it harder to predict what the UK will do, but there's everything to play for, and we genuinely believe that public pressure is now more important than ever to ensure Cameron, Osborne, and Greening's legacy on international development is made real through a strong UK pledge to the Global Fund. This new timing means the original action materials that we wrote have been overtaken by events. Please do seek a meeting with your MP as it asks in the materials, because it's probably been a while since you last saw them, and that personal touch is absolutely crucial when you're making a big ask of them. But at the same time, we'd like to ask you to also write a letter right now. We want Cameron, Osborne and Greening to know that the UK public is looking to them for this very specific legacy, and the time is just so very tight for them to make that announcement before their time in office ends. So do write to your MP. On that note of urgency, I'll finish there for now, and I'd like to go over to Amira to give us a roundup of some of you grassroots more recent activities. Amira?
Hi everyone. I know some of you have already delivered some brilliant Healthy Lives events, and some of the groups have been hard at work on theirs over the past couple of months. We'd love to hear some updates across the network from groups who will be holding their events soon. Would someone from the London group like to give us an update on your event this weekend? And potentially after that, if there's any other updates, it'd be great to hear from the network.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, it's Matt from the London group. We've got an event this Saturday. It's at like a local family fair, which, if the weather's good, could have a few thousand people. We're going to focus on the first 1,000 days of life. Going to have activities for the kids, and then hopefully like pledge card for people to sign, which we can then forward on to DFID when it feels like a better time than now. And, yeah, that's the event, really. It's going to be this Saturday. We'll be able to tell you more next month. And thanks to Sandra in Manchester, who helped us plan.
Brilliant. Do we have any other updates from across the network around Healthy Lives events at all? Cool. So, it's great that these events... Oh, okay.
Hello. We haven't done anything since the conference.
Okay, what group is that, sorry?
Paul.
Oh, brilliant, cool, thank you. So it is really good that these events continue to build the momentum in the run-up to Rio. Now, I'm going to move on to a couple of events coming up with fund replenishment, the details of which appear on this month's action materials, which were emailed to you last week. First, on Tuesday next week, the 12th of July, there's a reception for parliamentarians ahead of the replenishment conference to talk about the life-saving work of the fund in tackling the three diseases. There are some places reserved for grassroots campaigners, so if you are free, please do come along and show the MPs that there's public support beyond Parliament for the work of the fund. The meeting will be in Parliament between 1 and 3pm, so if you are free, please let us know. As you know, you can contact Maddie on madelinemoore@results.org.uk. Secondly, the Department for International Development's Global Funds team has agreed to meet us. We sadly weren't able to arrange to meet them at last month's Advocacy Day, but we have been able to rearrange. Sadly, they rearranged the meeting again, so it's not on the day we said in the action materials. So originally, we said it would be on Wednesday the 13th, but it will now actually be on Thursday the 14th of July at DFID in Whitehall between 4 and 5pm. We'll be meeting at 3pm for a briefing at Cafe Nero on Trafalgar Square. Apologies for this change, which was beyond our control, so I hope some of you can come to that. The Global Fund team manages the UK's relationship, not only for the Global Fund to fight AIDS, TB and malaria, but some other important global bodies that we care about, including Gavi, the Vaccines Alliance, and historically also GPE, the Global Partnership for Education. Obviously, these are all areas that are utmost importance to results. So we'll have a range of things to talk to them about, and of course, we will provide you with a full briefing. So I've mentioned a couple of times, please do get in touch if you're interested in...
Thanks, Amira, and thank you for everyone who's been taking action in support of 0.7 and the Healthy Lives campaign. And I heard a couple of people join the call. I'm hoping that one of them is our guest speaker, Mark. Was one of those you?
Yeah, it is. Sorry, I was on mute.
Hi, Mark. It's thank you so much
Hi.
For joining us. If it's okay, I'll just give you a quick introduction, both to you, so you know who's on the call, and also for everybody, for you. I think we just want to start by saying a very big thank you, and just to say that we're really honoured that you're joining us tonight. Mark's joining us from Greece, where it's already 2 hours ahead of us in the UK, and it's very late there. Mark's Wikipedia page describes him as an American diplomat, physician, and aid worker. But they're all fairly short titles to describe a very long career in public health that started 25 years ago when he began working with AIDS patients in San Francisco. He's worked closely with President George Bush to set up PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, itself a multi-billion dollar fund fighting the diseases. I've known Mark for many years. It's been absolutely wonderful to see how he's consistently worked to ensure TB is not left behind in the work of the Global Fund. Mark, we're really honoured to have you here, particularly since you're on leave. You're on a conference call with Results Volunteer campaigners from all over the UK, from up in Scotland right down to the South Coast. And it's really amazing, a very timely opportunity for them to hear your views on where we are right now with the Global Fund for Replenishment. So, welcome.
Thank you. I've never read my Wikipedia page, so thank you for telling me what's on it.
Well, look, Mark, we're surely just going to hand over the call to our grassroots campaigners, which have some questions that we've sort of pre-lined up. Before we go to that, though, would you mind quickly introducing your role at the Global Fund, being the director there involved? And maybe you could share a reflection on your personal motivation for why you're involved in this mission.
Thanks, and thank you to all of you for letting me barge in on your call. My role at the Global Fund is executive director, which just means I get to go to a lot of meetings. Really what it's about is bringing people together to solve big problems like ending HIV, TB, and malaria. And, I've been involved in this stuff for a long time, and the reason I still do it is what we have to do bureaucratically matters to individual human beings. And I've seen personally, having gone to the same places, the same villages over 15 years, the difference these interventions and investments make, not in big numbers, but in human beings' lives, and that's what it's all about. So it's an honor to be with all of you who feel the same way, and I look forward to your questions.
Thanks, Mark. Before we go to the very first question, I'd like to remind everybody of our usual format, which is that once we've had the initial questions, we'll open it up to the floor. As always, you can text them in rather than asking them verbally if you prefer. The number to text the questions in tonight, grab your pen, is 0777-56-111-78. So that's 0777-56-111-78. And now we're going to jump over to the first question, which is going to come from our group in Linlithgow up in Scotland.
Mark, This is a question from Scotland. The Global Fund has asked for $13 billion to cover the period 2017 to 19, overcome the three epidemics that have been mentioned, AIDS, TB, and malaria. Why is this figure of $13 billion the right amount, and what are the main challenges as you see that?
Thanks for that question from Scotland. It's great you're still in the UK and still participating in this effort. Scotland's hugely important, so it's great you're all involved. So $13 billion is the right number, we think, even though we'd like more. And as we say in our investment case, more is more. Because if we look at where we are in the diseases and where we need to be over the next 3 years to achieve the ambitious sustainable development goals of ending these diseases as epidemics, it doesn't mean they won't exist anymore, but ending them as epidemics by 2030, we need to be on a certain trajectory. And if we get off that trajectory, it's going to be really hard to get back on it. Because tipping points, and we're on the right side of the tipping point in all three diseases, that we're going in the right direction in terms of new infections, we're going in the right direction in terms of people accessing care and treatment, but we're not anywhere near there. And we have to be on a certain trajectory over the next 3 years to get to that goal of ending these as epidemics. And that $13 billion was done on a calculation of what happens if everyone else in the world, the other external funders for HIV, TB, and malaria stay at their same level, which is a big hope, but I think it's achievable. And what happens if countries increase their domestic financing at a rate that's commensurate with their projected economic growth? If we can raise $13 billion to contribute, we can achieve 80% of the trajectory that's necessary over the next 3 years to get to the end of these as epidemics. And the reason we think 80% is sufficient is it actually within a confidence interval, which is too complex to get into, that keeps us on the right trajectory, the right path. But also we think with new innovation, we can get there. And the reality is it's also practical. We're going to have a tough time getting to 13, and if the UK doesn't get to 1.2 billion, we have zero chance of getting there, literally zero chance of getting there. We can't possibly have a successful replenishment. And a lot of countries have stepped up, but we have a few more big ones to go, and the UK is the biggest of those. So thank you for that question.
Thanks, Mark. I think that leads in quite well to question number two, which is coming from Brighton, the other end of the country.
A question of what are the main challenges that Mark sees in getting the sum from donors?
So great to hear from you from Brighton, a city I really love. I hope I heard it was sunny but very cold, so I hope it's gotten sunny and warm. So the main challenges right now are two. One, the UK, and the other is Germany. So, you know, Japan, a lot of people look at and say, well, it was the same level. It was the same level because they are the only other country besides the U.S. to pledge in dollars. In real terms, it's a 40% increase because the yen has fallen against the dollar by 40%. And the exchange rate's a massive problem for us overall. While the EC increased by 37%, which is fantastic, it basically made up for the difference in the exchange rate. Italy just pledged a 30% increase. France stayed stable, which was a huge, huge effort. But basically, we're down to what's going to make the difference in achieving the replenishment at the UK and Germany. The U.S. is committed to match 2-to-1, and President Obama has already put in the budget to go from $4 billion, because that's where we were. They can only give a third at $12 billion to $4.33 billion, which is what they could contribute if we raise 13. So if we can get the UK to 1.2 and Germany to 800, both of which we're working on very hard, and I'm sure we'll come back to the UK, if we can get there, we can reach the 13 and access that full amount from the US. If we don't access the full amount from the US, and we lose more lives. So the biggest challenges are UK and Germany right now because everyone else has lined up. And I would say we should all be very thankful to Prime Minister Trudeau, who's going all out, really using his personal influence. It's the first time we've ever had a head of government, head of state, launch the replenishment. It's always been done by delegated down to foreign ministers or ministers of health. And often the head of state will do a few things, but this one is Trudeau is totally involved. And it's in part because he cares about HIV, TB, and malaria, but it's about a bigger message that if we work together, if we look forward and outward, not inward and backward, we can solve any problem, including ending these epidemics. And to do that, we need to engage young people, and we need to make sure we take care of girls and women so we have gender equality. So it's a very exciting replenishment. It's not just about the Global Fund. It's not just about the $13 billion. It's about something much bigger. But really, it's going to come down to the UK and Germany. And if we can't raise 13, the ripple effect on other replenishments, the ripple effect on other efforts, whether it's Gavi or the other institutions you all fight for and care about, we just can't get there. So thank you for the question. The challenges are the exchange rate and the UK and Germany.
Thanks, Mark. So I think we're actually going to jump to London for the next question. London, are you ready to ask your question?
Hello. My question is, you will be aware of the Brexit vote and political upheaval following this. What are your hopes for the UK given this huge distraction? Thank you.
Yeah. It's tough. It's not just a distraction. I mean, obviously, it's more than just about the vote. We think the opportunity is, you know, and everyone we've talked to, and I was just there not long ago, not only in the government, but throughout the current ruling party, but also others, is while there was a vote to leave the European Union, there's a real sense that it doesn't mean we're the desires to leave international engagement. And so we're, you know, one of the challenges is that the government, which is supposed to stay until October when first announced, leaves September 9th, as you all know, which is literally a week before our replenishment conference, September 16th. And getting a new set of actors to act on anything in a week is almost impossible. So the current government's going to have to work with whomever the new government's going to be, which means working with all of the candidates for prime minister to make sure that when there's a transition, it occurs in a positive way towards the fund. And one of the key things is to make the clear point that if within a week of exiting Europe, you back off from your first major international action, that tells the world you're not only leaving the EU, you're leaving your global engagement. And that's not a message anyone particularly wants, that I've talked to anyway, particularly wants to give. So we do have an opportunity in that, you know, this is the first action after a transition in government and after the vote to say we're still engaging globally, we're still leading, which the UK has done on 0.7 on malaria. They've been engaged on TB and HIV, but it's really been malaria so far that's pushing them. So that opportunity to stay engaged. But it is an enormous challenge going from a September 9th transition of prime minister to a September 16th pledge. So this event on the 12th is hugely important. On July 12th is hugely important to send a clear signal across Parliament, across the current administration, to pass the message to the next administration that this is something that matters. So while Brexit is a challenge in many ways, it's also an opportunity to really press home the key message that you don't want to be seen to both be leaving Europe and be leaving your current leadership role, your current engagement in the global environment. And, you know, July 12th matters, but really building up to September 9th and the opportunity to make sure there's a pledge that is at the level that's necessary to get to the 13, which is $1.2
billion. So thanks, Mark. And I think that is helpful. And just before you came on the call, I think what Amira was talking about, that event on the 12th of July, reception for parliamentarians in Parliament between 1 and 3 p.m. There are space for campaigners to come along as well. contact us in the office and if you want to come to that weekend, see if we can squeeze you in. We're going to go across to Bristol for our last pre-trade question, and the lines will be open.
Hi, Mark. What can we as UK campaigners do to help you achieve the target replenishment?
Thank you for that question, and I really want to thank every one of you on this call because, you know, I've been privileged to work with results for a long time, probably 17, 18 years now. And I've never been more impressed by an organization because you're all volunteers. And you come from enormously important professions, and you come from enormously important places, and you give your time, and I've seen you in action, and you're just an amazing organization. And the Global Fund wouldn't be where we are, Gavi wouldn't be where it is, none of us would be where we are if it weren't for your active engagement. So what you can do in the UK, and, you know, to be honest, my husband's giving me dirty looks and about stepping away from dinner. But I really wanted to be on this call because to tell you how much I personally and we all appreciate what you do. And we're at a pivotal moment in the UK. And the reality is that when we go in and advocate as global people, we have a certain impact, but I would say it's pretty marginal compared to your impact. So what you can do is let every member of parliament know that you care about this and you will be watching. And you know, the 12th is important because it's in London and the members of parliament will be there. But to be honest, the more impactful thing is for each one of you to go in to your representative, to your members of parliament, and tell them in your constituency that this matters and you care about it and you've got to show right now that the UK is engaging and cares globally and wants to stay involved and how important 0.7 and a replenishment pledge to the Global Fund is. And so while the 12th is important, what you can do in your districts between now and your constituencies between now and September 9th and September 12th will make all the difference in the world. It seriously will make all the difference in the world because what happens in those constituency matters. So Joe Cox was a very close personal friend and we're all still reeling from what happened to her. But I know from her, from being a good friend of hers and other members of parliament, that they actually, you know, they go out, they do these meetings. Sadly, it cost her life, but they do these meetings with their constituents and they listen to them. And if you are in your constituency telling your members of parliament that this is something you care about and will matter to you and you will act on it, that will make all the difference in the world. I cannot possibly overstate how important your direct engagement in your constituencies will be. You don't have to go to London. What matters is to go to your MPs in their constituency and tell them how much it matters to you as their voters and as the people who will support or not support them. Particularly if you happen to be in a conservative constituency. But in general, to maintain the support across party is hugely important.
Thanks, Mark. I know that we're keeping you from your evening, but if you could stay on the line to just answer just a few more questions, 8 more minutes, that would be really wonderful. Do we have anybody that has any other questions that they'd like to ask Mark Scheibel? Because I have one here.
Oh,
here we go. Go ahead, Paul.
Hello. In the current price and tuberculosis will take another 150 years. What were the global goals? Well, in fact, development goals, it would be the forecast.
Sorry, we're having a hard time hearing you, Paul. I'm sorry. Could you maybe speak up to get a bit closer to the phone?
Yeah, at the current rate of program, it says that ending tuberculosis will take another 150 years. I thought Millennium Development Goals and the global goals, it would be sooner than that. Why is that?
It's a It's a great question. Why tuberculosis is at a 1.5% decline for urinary infections, which actually in absolute numbers is increasing because of the population growth. So there are a couple of reasons, and I think the, one of the basic reasons is policies, and the other reason is financing. So, you know, the Global Fund is 80% of external financing for tuberculosis, because the majority of tuberculosis exists in, about 75% in BRICS, China, where we don't have programs, India account for a huge chunk of tuberculosis in the world. And if they don't actually correct, you can't get towards the global goals. So we spend an enormous amount of effort on policy work, not just financial work. We're 8% of the India TB program. We're 0 of the China program. But we do have huge impact on the what we're seeing in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, and countries that are engaging is remarkable. And we're really engaging in Eastern Europe, where we're seeing a huge uptick in HIV and TB and MDR-TB as a result of bad policies related to people who inject drugs, basically. So what we need are not is not only money, but policy change, and we're very engaged in that. We're optimistic that with changes in policy that lead to active case detection versus passive case detection, and that use the modern tools that we have available to us, and that's not drugs, it's actually how you get people into services and keep them into services, we can get to that goal. But it will take a much sharper change in direction. But a lot of that is driven by India and China, and that's why the numbers look so bad. The other big driver is Russia, and I'm afraid we're not going to make much progress there. But at least in India and China, we're making huge inroads. South Africa, huge inroads. So we're absolutely convinced we can get there if we stay focused and engage in the way that we've begun to engage in the last couple of years.
Thanks, Mark. And I mean, I think it's also important to note that, you know, I was involved in helping pull together the new global plan to end TB, which sort of spells out some of the things that Mark's been talking about and how we might use those in different regions
yep.
of the world to help get that curve bending down faster so it doesn't take 150 years, but we can actually do it in 14, which is where we really want to go. Do we have any other questions for Mark?
Hello,
Paul Baguette. Okay, I've got Pete in Stork Valley, and then I've got Paul. And maybe we take both questions and see if Mark can answer them both at the same time. So, Pete, do you want to go first?
Yeah, my MP is a conservative, and he is vocally against the current aid level. He was unwilling to oppose it. He's a male reader. He's worried about his constituents. And I know that at heart, he's into overseas development. So how do I approach a guy like that, who doesn't want to be seen to be increasing overseas aid, or something like that, but actually believes in it externally? That's the question.
Yep.
Thanks, Pete. So your MP doesn't want to be seen to be supporting it, but you know in his heart he does. And then let's go down to Paul.
Hey, my question is about the UK
So Emily, you're going to have to get a lot closer to the phone, I think.
Hey, if our find if the UK current binding at the moment, does that affect how much leverage the Global Fund can get from the value of our pledge?
So both really good questions. On the first, you know, we see this a lot, unfortunately, Paul, with members not only in the UK but other places that believe in development but are afraid because of their constituency. In the end, the only way to fight that is other constituents going in and giving a different perspective. But the other thing is, you know, if you look at polls in the UK and everywhere else, as long as you can show that taxpayer dollars are saving lives and that you're actually showing having a leadership role and correcting the misperception about how much is actually going, so 0.7%, you know, if you ask most people in the UK, the US, Canada, Europe in general, they'll say, you know, they think that the right amount for development is 10%. Most people actually think we're spending 40% on development, countries are spending 40% on development. So some of it's an education process. But the leadership and the saving of lives, there are very few, a lot of people think that development money is wasted. So if you can show lives are being saved and there's good value for money, you can actually overcome most of the inherent bias against development, because people don't think it's being wasted and lives aren't being saved. And most people, including most, especially conservatives, on the life-saving front, whether it's religious or for other reasons, get pretty jazzed up about it. So I think that the important arguments are that it's actually a very small amount of money relative to other things, and the impact for that amount of money is enormous, including ending epidemics and saving a lot of lives. And the lives saved tends to resonate more, actually, than ending epidemics, because they can visualize saving a life and that it happens immediately makes a huge difference. And if you need more information about all that, we're happy to provide it. But I think an important number is, so far, the Global Fund supported programs have saved 17 million lives. And the Cameron government used that all the time and said, look, that's saving a life every 3 minutes. I think that was the math they used. So, you know, the life saved, the value for money, and that it's actually not that much money, so therefore we're standing out in the world as leaders, usually will win over even conservative members. And then the default is, look, support it, just don't do it publicly. And a lot of people do that. So they support it, but they don't publicly, they don't ask for articles, they don't ask for being praised. They just need to know that they have enough constituency that will back them. On the exchange rate, it's a problem if we use spot rates, but we don't use spot rates. So we'll use a rolling five-year average. So while the current dip has an impact, it doesn't when we use a five-year rolling average, which is what most financial institutions do. And the reality is the likelihood is the pound will increase in its value again. And fortunately, the impact on countries is relatively small because of the dollar has gained in value, which is really what's happening because the euro dipped too. Everything's dipped. Because we operate in other countries, when we give grants to a country, it's either in euros or dollars, even though we convert the pounds. The countries, because their currencies are dropping even faster, end up doing okay. It's a problem, but it's not a debilitating problem. But in part, that's why the $1.2 billion is absolutely necessary.
Thanks, Mark. That's a great set of answers to round out the call. It's coming up to quarter two, so I'm going to let you get back to your evening. I just want to say a very huge thank you once again for taking time out of your well-earned time away. I'm sure you'll be back in the office any minute now. But really, thank you so much for taking the time this evening to speak to us all.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be with all of you, and have a great evening, all of you. Thank you for taking your time as volunteers. Really appreciate it. And thanks for the opportunity to be with you. Have a good evening.
Okay. Yeah. Cheers, Mark. Okay. So I just want to say, before we move on to the next bit of the call, that I am really proud that Mark, the executive director of the Global Fund, a hugely busy guy. I mean, he wasn't joking when he said his job primarily consists of going to meetings. I mean, it's amazing. We kind of track where he goes in the world, and he's always popping up every other day. It seems to be a different country for a different meeting, for a different statement about the three diseases. So the fact that he's taking time out from his very limited personal time to spend time talking to all of us is really says a lot about our reputation as an organization. And, you know, when he talks about the value that you all bring to global fund replenishment efforts, he's being really genuine, because he sees the results of that in terms of the support with parliamentarians and leaders that he meets with as part of his work as well. So I am going to very briefly at this point hand over to Naveed, who has some information about next month's action in August, because we're changing it up a little bit because there's a lot going on in the world right now. Naveed, are you there?
Yes, thanks, Aaron. So it may seem a bit it's odd for me to be talking about the August monthly action when we've just been hearing about July's, but this is to flag up something that's quite important. As some of you may have spotted, the planned high-level nutrition for growth event in Rio is on the 4th of August. Now, that's just 2 days after our next scheduled conference call. So, obviously, that wouldn't give you any time at all for taking action. So, as with last month, we'll send out the next monthly action early to give you a bit more time to influence the process. We expect this to be a media and social media action, and you should receive the materials around about the 14th of July. We should say that with the political uncertainty that's happening in Brazil, it's now thought really very unlikely that it will be a pledging moment, which is disappointing for those of us who have been hopefully working towards that. Some of you may have heard insider information about this if you were on the meeting on the advocacy day with DFID's nutrition team, but we wanted to share it with all of you. But instead of being a pledging moment, what DFID and others are hoping that it will be is a chance to reinvigorate the momentum around nutrition and hopefully actually set a date for a pledging moment, which could be either later in 2016 or in the first part of 2017. So the UK, having put quite a lot of political capital over the years into nutrition, really wants us to help, I think, or we can really help them, and reinvigorate that momentum. So we'll be aiming to influence that, and I think we're still hoping that the UK will send a high-level political representative to the event, and that could possibly still even be David Cameron. So that's really important for you to know that, and apologies that for a second month running, we'll have squeezed some actions very close together, but we do want to ensure that your efforts have maximum impact. We will do our best to space actions more sustainably in future. Thank you for all that you can do, and please, please don't feel guilty if you haven't been able to respond to everything. We know it's been a really busy summer. So thank you, and back to you, Aaron.
Thanks, Naveed. I'd just like to start wrapping up the call by saying how great it was to spend time with many of you at the National Conference last month down in London. As always, it was really inspiring to hear about what you've been up to, all the things you've achieved, and your passion for making a difference in the world. It feels a lot like a family gathering, and it always leaves me so full of excitement and energy that really fuels my work for the year ahead. It came at a good time because we've got a lot to do in the next few months, and particularly, you know, it never gets any less busy because the next few years are really where we need to get on that right trajectory for meeting the global goals, the kind of trajectory that Mark was talking about when he was talking about what we need to do to beat the three diseases. We need to get that $13 billion. And we also know that with all of the political uncertainty, it really isn't going to get any easier, particularly in the short term. But we also know from the National Conference that you lot are a passionate and informed and determined body of grassroots campaigners that will just carry on keeping action until we get justice for the people who are most marginalized and most in need of an education, of healthy lives, and of economic opportunities. It was really great to meet some of you who are newer to results. My very first encounter with results was coming along to a national conference, and, you know, look where I ended up. I hope that all of you that were at the national conference were inspired to take action on these issues as well. And because it doesn't ever rain but it pours, just last week I was in Washington, D.C. for the international conference with 600 people from 31 countries that all came together in Washington, D.C. A whole pile of them were obviously Americans, because for them it's not quite so far to go. Their advocacy day consisted of literally hundreds and hundreds of meetings on the U.S. Capitol. And while we were there, we did lots of interesting stuff as well with the executive directors. But I think you probably had enough of me telling you the sort of stuff that's been going on. We were really lucky to be joined by Claire from Aylesbury, our Aylesbury group leader. Claire, are you on the line? Do you want to maybe share a few thoughts about what it was like to go to the international conference and be surrounded by 599 other crazy and intense advocates for international development?
Hello? Is that working?
We can hear you.
Hi. Yeah, kind of like Aaron said, really. It was
lots of very enthusiastic Americans. It's very different to our conference, but really interesting and a really great experience with hundreds of other advocates around the world. So they were mainly Americans there, but there were Canadians, there were Australians, South Koreans. I can't remember all the different countries they were from, but it was very interesting to results advocates around the world and find out how people do things in different countries. It was, yeah, it was great. And going to meetings on Capitol Hill was really good as well, meeting congressmen and senators, and then going to the World Bank. It was packed, but yeah.
Thanks, Claire. So top tips if people want to come to the international conference next year?
Top tips while you're there, things you should do. It's kind of making the most of it, really, talking to as many people as possible and getting those kind of connections and finding out how people do it, how things work kind of on the ground, not just in America, but around the world as well. It's trying to sort of learn lessons from them and how they do things. The Americans are very very enthusiastic and very successful in the way they do results, and it's not necessarily, it's not the same over here. We do things in a very different way, but there are still things that we can all learn from each other, and everybody's very supportive and friendly, and it's just great to go along and get involved.
Thanks, Claire. I think one of the things that I found most interesting when I was over there working with some of their grassroots was that they don't talk so much about creating and working with and empowering and training advocates for international development. They talk about creating leaders in the fight against global poverty. And that might be a kind of a subtle difference, just it's a different label. But I think it's one that really struck me and one that I want to share with all of you, because whether you realize it or not, if you're on this call, you are already a leader in the fight against global poverty. And I want to make sure that you never forget that, because that's really, really important for you to remember as you take your actions, as you reach out and seek a meeting with your parliamentarian, and as you write them a letter explaining to them how important it is that the UK makes a big pledge to the Global Fund, despite some of the uncertainties around government and politics at the moment. So please do keep that in mind, and do get into action, have some fun with it. If you need any help with anything, of course, do feel free to reach out to us here at the office. You've got all of our email addresses, and we'd just be all too pleased to help out. Unless anybody else has a burning question, I am going to close the call.
Yes, Clara. Hi. I'm going to write a blog post about everything that happened in America. I know I've explained it very badly here, but it was a really, really interesting conference, and I'm going to try and get it all down into a blog, which will be out fairly soon, I hope.
Thanks, Claire. And I don't think you did a bad job at all. We'll take a look out for that. Oh, and I was also reminded to just say one more thing, too, about the event that's coming out on the 12th. Is this going to Parliament and seeing parliamentarians and being able to, rouse about for a pledge on the Global Fund wasn't exciting enough. I am pleased to let you know that I'm now allowed to tell you that Annie Lennox is also going to be coming along to that event as well. So if you've got a CD you want signed, you could come along. Annie Lennox is going to be there. She's a really, those of you will probably know her as a long-standing campaigner for against HIV/AIDS, a real, real champion and a powerful voice in the fight against the diseases. So she'll be along at that event as well, so she'll be quite exciting. And if you contact your parliamentarian between now and the 12th, you can tell them that she will be there also, as an additional draw to try and get them into the room. Again, 1 to 3pm on the 12th, and we can give you any further details that you need if you don't have them. Anyway, on that note, I will call the call to a close this evening, wishing you all the very best for your actions this month, and we will be in contact with you very soon about what's coming up in August. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.